Brenda Barbanel, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week. It's good to see you. I've wanted to get together with you since you've been back here at UNLV, and I'm glad we could get together now.
All right, thanks, Roger. It's good to be here, too.
So I want to talk mostly about esports. You have really made a niche here at UNLV, the Institute for Gaming, the International Gaming Institute, with esports. And let's explain, you know, how you got back here and how that works into the work that you're doing now.
Sure. How far back do you want to go?
Well, you were at UCLA for a while, and you came back here. Why don't you explain that transition to begin with?
Sure. Well, I finished my degree here at UNLV, my PhD, and then I went over to UCLA, where I was doing, frankly, mostly the same thing that I'm doing here now, doing gambling research. Pretty much everything under that umbrella is everything from behavior to policy, economic impact, social impact, attitudes and emotions toward gambling itself. And after I'd been there for a few years, this position, which had been vacated actually about, I think, a year and a half prior, became open, and I thought, oh, well, you know, it'd be nice to move back to Las Vegas.
Sure.
So I applied, and here I am.
Okay. So the esports discipline, I mean, we've been following that now for a couple of years. We went to Chris Grove's great conference last spring, which I found very enlightening. But how did you get into that end of it then?
So I got into it. I've been playing video games for a while.
Yeah.
I've been going all the way back to, you know, the original Nintendo and all that, not to age myself too much. I am still a millennial,
okay,
so I'll just throw that out there
fine.
Then.
And so
I've been doing, yes, excellent. I've been doing that for, oh gosh, a very long time, decades.
Yeah.
And I really casually, I've never played that frequently, mostly because for time constraints,
sure,
as fun as it is, I simply am not, you know, 8 years old anymore, so I just don't have the time. And as I was playing, my husband actually plays quite a lot of video games, and I was noticing that gambling kept sort of cropping up in all of these, whether it was in just a simple RNG function in World of Warcraft, where, you know, they have certain items where you can buy it for, say, you know, 10 gold, and then once you open this item, which is blind to you until you buy it, has anywhere from 1 to 100 gold in it. Another base example, a little bit different.
And that,
of course, is gambling, or risking something of value on the outcome that's uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it might not be a monetary value, but these types of things were starting to show up as present in these games. We saw things like slot machines in the bar in Borderlands, something simple as that. In Nintendo games, you know, all sorts of different wagers on who's going to win. You know, you can bet on random games with again, coins of value. So this kept cropping up, and we started seeing, as these tournaments were getting more and more popular, the sport was starting to become legitimized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fairly established, kind of sociologically speaking, that as something becomes more and more mainstream and acknowledged, we generally see gambling on it.
Right.
People like to place a bet.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had, I'm going to digress for a second here. I had a couple of folks from, oh my gosh, which university were they at? Over on the East Coast, and they had put together a prediction model for different policy in Washington. So it was just sort of, it gave a percentage estimate of how likely it was that certain laws would pass. It was a text-based algorithm they used. And so they wanted to chat about the different ways that this could be related to actual gambling.
Right.
It's a prediction market. Usually monies are attached to those.
Right.
and so at one point, I was talking to them, and one of them said, okay, but you know, what else, what are the other things people bet on? And I said, oh, you know, everything. People bet on everything. And that was the same thing, the same phenomenon that we were seeing with esports. And once I started seeing that coming up, so this would have been now about, gosh, about 3 years ago now. I think it was around January, February of 2014 that I really started paying attention mm-hmm. to how the two were merging together. And right. previously I'd been doing a fair amount of research in online gambling, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of the gambling that you see in this space. Right. And so the transition to include video games and competitive mm-hmm. video games, esports, into that was fairly natural. It also allows me to play video games at work and have it actually be work. Right. So that's always a nice bonus. Results, yeah. Yes. And I had a student in here a couple months ago, an undergrad. I'm on his thesis committee, and he was in here, and I was pointing to something on my computer, and he sees on my desktop that I have Battle.net, and here's right. the Storm and Hearthstone on here, and he goes, oh, you're cool. And I was like, all right, there still got it.
So the industry started to get interested in esports when mm-hmm. they started realizing there were these gambling mm-hmm. things, and you know, coincidentally, millennials played esports as right. part of the market for them. So how have we seen that progression develop in terms of the industry looking at esports and where it's going?
We still seem to be in the somewhat preliminary stages. We're certainly farther along than we were when I first started looking at this a couple years ago.
Right.
We've had initial interest, I think, in many of the tournament events. So things like last spring, Mandalay Bay brought in the League of Legends Championship right. Series, mm-hmm. their spring finals they brought mm-hmm. there. That was last April.
Right.
And since then, that really, we'd had major esports events right. in Las Vegas before, mm-hmm. but this really seemed to be the major catalyst for change in terms of bringing in major events.
Right.
And we just had this last weekend was DreamHack, so a big Counter-Strike
right.
CSGO competition
MGM,
over
right.
at MGM. So right. MGM obviously certainly sure. invested in
yeah.
these. But we've also seen other applications of esports. So usually when we talk about esports, we are specifically referring to competitive video gaming. This
right.
is the professional stage of video gaming. And then in some cases, we also have used it to refer to amateur competitions as well.
Right.
Esports, because it's such a generic term, sort of like, you know, we don't talk about a pickup soccer game
right.
as I'm going over to the sport game.
Right.
No, I'm going over to kick a ball around with my friends. So
sure.
so we get a little bit more specific mm-hmm. generally with physical sport. And so we also see other, again, this amateur level e-sporting event around town. So as an example, I know you mentioned you had a podcast with Seth Shore a couple
mm-hmm.
weeks
right.
ago. The e-sports lounge at the downtown Grand,
mm-hmm.
that is one of the manifestations
right.
of e-sports that we've seen. We've seen video game lounge space that's been in some of the casinos
mm-hmm.
now for a
yeah.
while, but it hasn't really been set up as competition
right.
or tournament space. It's just been a space where you could go and rent time
mm-hmm. sure.
on a console or device. Then we also have, for a second, I lost my train of thought there, Level Up over at MGM
right.
Grand,
mm-hmm.
and that also, again, a slightly different
mm-hmm.
iteration of the gaming space. That I'm not sure I would call yet esports
right.
space, but it is very much gaming, and they have included competitive gaming in that. They had,
right.
in conjunction with the DreamHack event last weekend, a big skill-based game competition, everyone's
right.
beloved Frogger,
right.
and
yes.
I got a whole lot of Seinfeld jokes out of that one. That
yes.
was a great,
okay.
yeah, that's a...
They haven't gotten the branding for the Seinfeld.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, like Kramer, I'm never
yeah,
going
right.
to have a child, okay?
sure.
This is the highlight of my life,
exactly.
and boy, did I butcher that quote, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah, so... There's a little bit of crossover also between esports and skill games
mm-hmm.
at the same time. And
very much so.
How is that working right now, and how do you envision that working? Well, first of all,
I want to
go back to where we were. The reason I'm here is because
yeah.
you and Chris Grove and a couple of other people
mm-hmm.
Seth, have
mm-hmm.
formed a committee here in Nevada to encourage the development of esports in the state. Explain how that came about and what the goals of that organization are.
Oh, yes, of course. So... Seth and I have been talking about this now for about a year at this point, and all the different ways that, again, the same discussion really that we're having now. How
sure.
does esports look in the gambling world?
Right.
And we had continued these discussions. Chris Grove, of course, came in. We both like him very much. And then Jennifer Roberts, my colleague here at the IGI, she's the Associate Director of the International Center for Gaming Regulation, or ICGR. The academic world is very big on long names and acronyms.
Right. So she'll bring the legal compliance.
Yes, she is a longtime Nevada gaming attorney. She is definitely our lawyer, and I actually very regularly, I'm very happy that she's right down the hall from me, because I would say probably a couple times a day, not even a couple times a week, a couple times a day, I'm over there poking my head and saying, hello, legal question. And so the four of us had been having meetings throughout, for about 8 months or so, really pretty much since I got back here in Las Vegas. And I started back here at UNLV on August 1st. So I think even that first week we had our first meeting. And we've been talking about different ways that we could formalize, this type of thing. The esports world, as quickly growing as it is and as huge it is, as much interest as there is, it's still fairly fragmented. There are a number of different developers. It's unlike traditional sport in the sense that, nobody owns football. The NFL runs a league for football, but so does the Canadian Football League. And football exists in many different forms. You know, if I want to go back to the pickup soccer example, Roger, if you and I want to go down to the park right now and throw a football around, we can. Nobody's stopping us from doing that. If we wanted to sit down and play a game of League of Legends together, we would have to pay for that. That game belongs to Riot Games.
Right.
So that's one of the ways in which it's fragmented. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
It's just that the proprietary nature of these games mean that there's different segments who have different interests. And that's just in the game development component. We also have different tournament organizers who are trying to put together their own tournaments. We have different teams. And there's no, there's no formal league like there is with the NFL. There are a number of different leagues.
Right.
So it's almost as though we have NFL 1, 2, 3, 4, 5
around.
Some, of course, with more prestige than others. All of this to say, fairly fragmented. So one of the things that we wanted to do was provide not cohesiveness, but some cohesiveness to this space. And one of the things that we thought would really be beneficial, particularly to the state, was to promote the things that Nevada has, the qualities that the state has that might be able to provide that type of cohesion. I mean, this is the state that has a very large established tourism infrastructure. I mean, Las Vegas is not just gambling. It's a major tourist destination. And LVCVA, we can back that up with about 1,000 different data points. And so that's one major way in which the city and the state itself, because it's not just Las Vegas, we have all over the state, the capability to bring in these types of events. So hosting these, that's just in the nature of hosting the events. And then as far as the gambling component goes, we have one of the highest standards of gambling regulation, certainly in the country, and it's probably a little cocky to say so, but I would say also on the world scale as well, Nevada, and we call ourselves the gold standard of gambling regulation. And we don't necessarily have online gambling on the same scope as everybody else, which is, of course, a major component of esports.
Nevada was still on the cutting edge.
But
of the
exactly.
Process.
Nevada is on the cutting edge, and still is,
and
frankly.
Still is,
on the cutting edge. And it's not as though we've banned online gambling. It's just steps in
Nevada
this.
Nevada has a history of introducing things
into very
the,
much
the United
so.
States, if not the world, of really innovative types of gambling. For the sports betting apps that we have now, are certainly weren't the first in the world, but they certainly were the first in the U.S. And you can count infinite number of games and things like that have been dealt on the slot side. So Nevada has a history of this. So
and totally agree. It's the perfect segue into the type of innovation that esports both has and may end up using in the future.
Sure.
So from our view, perhaps a little bit biased because we're here and we like it here. We see Nevada's opportunity to be a major hub for esports. I mean, we're totally cognizant of the fact that esports largely, not completely, but largely lives on the internet. And the internet doesn't care that if I get in my car and drive 45 minutes south, I'll be in California. Right. It doesn't care that I can, you know, if I want to go buy a lottery ticket, I got that little inlet in the the parking lot in Prim. It is. And so it's a global phenomenon, this esports thing, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to establish Nevada's place in that global network. It's not the idea, and I want to really emphasize, we're not trying to say Nevada's the only place where esports can be. What we're trying to say is Nevada is a great place to be a major hub, whether that be hosting events or establishing gambling regulations, or even just as an intellectual hub in the way that Las Vegas has really established itself as an intellectual hub for gambling itself. We may not be the biggest gambling market in the world anymore, but people still come here all the time to learn about gambling itself and means of policy and regulation and other things. Yeah.
Okay, so we talked about the way esports and skill games are related. Is the development of the regulations on both of those, are they going to overlap the same way?
The same way in what sense?
In terms of, you've got to consider, both elements of this at the same time that you're going to develop these regulations.
I think we'll certainly see components of both come together, especially since there have been a number of different efforts and continual efforts, and some success as well, in the gamblification of existing games. And I know there's certainly interest in the popularity of these video games and the ways in which we might be able to gamblify them and have sort of this hybrid, just like the Frogger example. That's not Frogger, it's a gamblified form of Frogger. Yeah. And I think when we see that intersection, we'll definitely see regulatory intersection as well.
So tell us, there was some sort of a gambling scandal in esports about a year ago.
Yes.
how does that impact the way the regulators are looking at esports right now? And explain what that was, because I can't remember.
Oh, you're right. So I'll go back in one more step just to describe it. This all centered around something we call skins betting.
Right.
So skins are the aesthetic items that one can acquire in a video game.
And all virtually worthless, but still money came out of it.
Yes. So for some, not virtually worthless. So what we saw was in some games, because just about every game has skins. It's particularly some of these major games. And some have limited number of skins, some have them all over the place. But these are things like a piece of armor or a knife that has a cool design on it, as opposed to just being a plain gray shoulder pad or rifle or something like that in game. And the way these are acquired, it varies based on the game. I'll use the example of Counter-Strike because that's the scandal to which we're referring here. And what we saw with this is, in Counter-Strike, you can either purchase through what's called the Steam Marketplace. So I'm getting actually a little ahead of myself again. Okay. So Counter-Strike is a game owned by and developed by a company called Valve. Valve also runs what they call the Steam Marketplace. And so through Steam, you can purchase the games themselves. Right. You can purchase items and, or rather, you can trade these items. And they, one of the things they did a few years ago was they opened up the API for the Steam Marketplace so you could directly log into it from third-party websites. Okay. And thus, there was a means of trading your items, not directly necessarily through the app, but also through other... It's similar to the example I like to give, and like when I log on to the simplistic example, very much so, is when you log onto a news website and it says, oh, would you like to log in with Facebook to leave a comment?
Right.
Similar in that sense. And so when you opened up the API like that, there was a means of trading. But then that also, of course, people are clever, right? So there's a means then of exchanging these items for something else. And so very rare items then perhaps had a value higher than very common items, which is the norm in a market. And one of the things we saw is that people were setting this up such that you could exchange these items for currency, actual currency. And they then became virtual currencies in a way. Now, of course, when you have a new currency or any kind of currency, again, these very clever people tend to think, well, you know what you can do with currency?
Yeah.
I can bet with it.
Right.
Again, the nature of human beings. This
sure.
is a normal function
so
of us as humans.
Each
yeah.
other for this virtual currency.
Yeah.
Which is
and so we started seeing third-party websites mm-hmm. crop up where you could deposit your skin either directly on the site or through
mm-hmm.
another third-party exchange
right.
to convert the skin into cash, where you could then play using the equivalent value of that skin. So things like you can play blackjack with the equivalent value of your skin. You can play poker with
yeah.
the equivalent value of your skin. You could do, I mean, they had things as simple as the spinning of a wheel, and if
yeah.
it landed on your
so
chosen
it
item.
So limited to the game that the skin
exactly,
came from.
Right.
Okay.
And they also had sports betting, so you could use the value of your skin to wager on the outcome of some
mm-hmm.
tournament event. So it started getting tied to
right.
a lot of different pieces. And
all totally unregulated.
Yes, totally unregulated. One of the hugest issues with it actually was underage gambling
mm-hmm.
because with these games, the demographic
sure.
does tend to skew a little bit younger
right.
and there's a large number of teenagers, for example, who play the game. So we saw quite a bit of underage gambling going on with that. One of the issues we also saw from the regulatory perspective is that this was one of those spaces where it was something that developed faster than the regulations
right.
could develop. So there wasn't really an enforcement agency with real teeth
right. sure.
to say, well, let's cut this out right now, guys.
Right.
this isn't what we would like out
yeah.
of our gambling industry. And it wasn't until July of last year. I actually remember the day it came out was the day of the National Council on Problem Gambling
mm-hmm.
had a sports and sports betting summit right before their
okay.
national or annual conference. And I was there sitting on a panel with a couple of other folks, and we were talking about esports and skins
mm-hmm.
betting. And the panel ended, and our phones were blowing up
yeah.
with emails and texts and everything. And what had happened was, during the hour we were talking
mm-hmm.
about all of this skins betting, Valve had issued cease and desist orders to these third-party gambling sites saying, you're
right.
breaking our terms of use in that we do not permit gambling on these third-party sites
right.
using our skins, you know, shut down now.
Sure.
So everything we had just said in that prior hour
right.
in the session
right.
was suddenly, in many ways, moot,
yeah, right.
or at least
right.
history.
but so this is going to make the regulators really dig into this really deeply.
Yeah, it called to attention in a way
yeah.
that hadn't really been called to attention before, because
mm-hmm.
it was a big, big movement.
Right.
And we saw a couple of different effects coming from this cease and desist order. Some of the more obvious effects were some sites just shut down.
Sure.
And we actually saw a similar effect to when the poker sites immediately shut down
right.
on April 15th, where
sure.
if you had a whole bunch of skins deposited, maybe you had a balance of
right.
equivalent $10,000,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly you couldn't access it because the site had
right.
shut down. But did you really have, you know, could you
right.
even get that?
Yeah,
was
right.
it was it $10,000?
Yeah.
The market values dropped. Some sites ended up blocking the U.S.-facing site, and then they still take skins
right.
betting wagers all over
mm-hmm.
the world, or the rest of the world, rather. And we actually, one of the really fascinating outcomes, an indirect outcome of this, was that viewership of Counter-Strike, especially
mm-hmm.
on the streaming sites like
right.
Twitch, it plummeted
really?
while the wagers plummeted.
Yeah.
And we had seen a lot of streams where it would be the stream. I mean, what happens with Twitch is you go on and you choose a channel, and the channels
yeah.
are the game. So you
yeah.
pick Counter-Strike, and you look at the channel or the streamers who are streaming on the Counter-Strike channel, and it's like half of them are just gambling with
yeah,
their
sure,
skins.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And that was actually another point of concern while this is all going on, is that it's teaching that gambling behavior to underage kids, and that's
right.
not something that hasn't happened in the past.
Sure.
In many ways, teaching certain forms of gambling, like probability and statistics,
right.
we frequently see poker used
mm-hmm.
as a tool of teaching negotiation skills
right.
and bluffing.
Sure.
But this was very much, it was almost like a how-to lesson in likely, a gray area, of
sure.
course, likely illegal gambling.
Sure.
So these days, well, just the last bit, it actually just saw yesterday that the Isle of Man announced that they will regulate skins betting sites.
Okay.
The site just has to apply for
mm-hmm.
a license. And the Great Britain Gambling Commission, they have suggested the same thing, that skins betting sites can come and apply for a license. I mean, I don't know if they'll get one, but sure. They can apply for one. There's no specific ban on it,
though. Yeah, well, I would imagine, though, they still have to adhere to standard regulations,
yes.
Which would be keeping,
yes, exactly.
Off of their sites.
And they also have to fulfill that suitability requirement, right. Which they might not at this point.
Exactly, right. So let's talk where we are now with the casino industry involved in esports. We mentioned, the esport lounges and things of that nature, but I believe Downtown Grand actually had an opportunity for their people to bet on an actual esports event. Was it late last year, was it?
Yes, November of last year. I think it was right before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, explain how that went and what kind of reception that got.
Well, it was pretty positive.
Yeah.
It was a quick turnaround, too. Mm-hmm. The Gambling Policy Committee had met in mid-November
right.
to discuss esports, and they decided that, we'd go forward with it, that on a case-by-case basis, mm-hmm. People could bring esporting events to the Gaming Control Board to say, I would like to take
sure.
wagers on this event, much in the same way we do with other sporting events.
Right.
And I'm specifically using event here because that's how we're classifying
it
as opposed to sports,
mm-hmm.
which then classifies it as sports betting,
okay.
which has all the other ramifications nationwide.
Right.
So on a case-by-case basis, they assess and determine if they'll allow sportsbooks to take wagers on that
right.
event. So Downtown Grand, with their sportsbook run by William Hill, had
right.
applied for an event, and it turned around so quickly, and so they took the very first wager.
Mm-hmm.
On an esports event back in November.
Okay.
And then they also just actually, the next major event was DreamHack last weekend. They took wages on that as well.
Okay, great. And did it go pretty seamlessly in terms of accepting the wagers, payouts, and all that kind of thing?
From what I understand, yes.
Yeah.
It fit within the current operation. So
okay.
it was added as an event much in the same way all the other events are added
okay.
on a case-by-case
okay.
basis. Yeah.
So, now we're seeing the leagues get involved. The NBA is just starting
mm-hmm.
their own esports league, and I thought it was going to be League of Legends, but it's just the NBA basketball.
Yeah.
And I know this esports arena downtown is doing a Madden
mm-hmm.
tournament next weekend or in a couple of weeks. So
mm-hmm.
so is that the way we're going to go at this point? To the established sports that people can play online or.
I think a big part of that also ties to that proprietary nature
right.
of games. Riot is pretty strict about how one is able to
right.
offer a League
sure.
of Legends tournament.
Right.
So I believe their current rules are that you can't offer a League of Legends tournament if the prize pool is greater than $1,000. And then after that's when theirs
mm-hmm.
comes in. Because they have a very large league that they themselves
okay.
run. Actually,
yeah.
they have a big arena
sure.
literally across the street from their offices in L.A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
where the league has their
okay.
weekly tournaments. So that's one of the reasons why we're not seeing, for example, NBA suddenly
yeah.
having a big tournament of League
so
of Legends
they would probably want
more than $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it also follows a little in line with some of the other trends we saw with these sports video
mm-hmm.
games. In Europe, I've seen a ton, actually, of soccer teams.
Mm-hmm.
I keep wanting to say football, then I remember.
Right.
I try and change my terminology
right,
depending
right.
on the country
exactly.
I'm in.
Exactly, right.
So you have a lot of soccer teams, including major English
sure,
Premier League
right,
teams,
yeah.
who and others around Europe who are sponsoring FIFA the video game
right.
players.
Yeah.
So, for example, West Ham United and
right.
Premier League, they have a player, an official West Ham FIFA the video game player,
mm-hmm.
who has an official West Ham jersey
okay.
with his name on the
yeah.
back, but not his real name. It's
sure.
it's Dragon with
right.
two N's because it's
his handle or whatever.
Yeah,
they call
yeah.
It.
His handle's Dragon.
Yeah.
And so this is something that we're seeing in other sports as well. It's
right.
not just unique to basketball. And actually, I was reading a fascinating article a few months ago on how even within the sport. So it's not just esports itself. These
right.
games really have quite a lot of overlap, and that there are teams. Throughout the FIFA organization, that greater FIFA
right.
organization, who use the video game as a means of game strategy. So they use the video game to test out different strategies and learn from the response to different strategies because the game is developed in a way that is quite useful. So I think when we see NBA having, you know, NBA, the video game tournaments, I think that we're seeing that in part because there is a parallel in the fandom and it's viewed in that way, but also just that the games are, they're still quite popular. Mm-hmm. They're just not on the same scale, I think, as League of Legends.
So this proprietary games is going to take a lot more thought if you want to get them into the casinos and get them into the betting mode that we're used to.
Certainly discussion.
Well, I'm really interested in this. It's a very interesting development in the business, you know. Mm-hmm. Certainly brings in the millennials, and we always want to see that. So let's stay in touch, and we'll continue to talk about this. And hopefully, you know, next time we talk, there'll be some real solid results, and we'll be able to look at
numbers. Oh, yes. Here's hoping.
Everybody wants to see.
There's been
numbers.
Some really... I mean, we're doing some neat research in the space. We're actually... Oh, I should plug us, actually, if while I'm here. Uh-oh. I hope the communications... I'm glad the communications people are in a different building, so they're not going to, like, stick their hand and be like, Brett, come on, what's going on here? But we have some really interesting projects. We have a couple projects right now that we're finalizing the contract on to move forward with, on just general attitudes and behaviors of esports enthusiasts, players, gamblers, to see what it is about the gambling component of these games that is of interest and is part of this changing gambling perspective as generations age. We also are looking at how, for example, different responsible gambling tools that we may already have in place might need to be different for this case.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, we've seen with the poker example that certain tools don't work for certain games. See how we might refine there. There's a couple folks over in our anthropology department, actually, who are doing some really fascinating work on they're actually looking at physiological responses, sort of an evolutionary psychology perspective on they're mostly on the actual esports video games, not the gambling crossover, but looking at, for example, you know, you take a cheek swab and you measure testosterone levels and see how that changes as we go through some of the go through the phases of the game, you know, before, during, after. How does that change? We're not doing the research yet, but we have a proposal that I'm slowly but surely putting together, bringing the same headsets back in a slightly different phase. Of course, this was, I think, 3 years ago that I last had looked into them, and now we have another neuroscientist who's interested in using these. It is amazing the way that technology with these headsets has developed in just a couple of years. I actually have the printer right here. And to look at how, you know, how brain activity, you know, just measuring brain activity during these games.
Yeah.
Is there any spike in activity when we see certain components of the game? Are there certain pieces that are particularly, do they invoke certain pleasure centers of the brain that we're looking at and say, oh, I really like this part.
Yeah.
You know, or if something jumps out from behind a box or, you know, when you jump back, does that inspire some sort of response?
Right.
Or does it not at all? Because if it doesn't, then you probably haven't designed it quite the way you want to.
Well, let's stay in touch. I'm sure you'll give us the results of these studies when they come out, and we'd certainly like to publish
we'll
them because
do.
Everybody's interested.
Yes, really, very neat. And also, we are redoing part of, I know you were trying to wrap it here, I'm sorry, I just got to make sure I cover everything here.
Everything.
We have our really... wonderful Konami gaming lab on the first floor of our building here. And we are actually reorienting some of the space such that the classroom space will become a hybrid classroom and esports lab so that it'll be good for research. It will be the most technologically advanced classroom on campus once the equipment is in. And also be a space for esports training and competition. We're going to have a stage set up with 6v6 computer setup so that people can come in and train. I know that the 8-Bit Esports Club, which is a club here on campus, is very excited. They keep asking us when it's going to be finished, but we work at the speed of university bureaucracy, so when that's done, it's ready.
Great. Well, thanks for the time, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. My pleasure, Roger. Thank you.
Great.